This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 5th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 341. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, it could cost almost $600 million for taxpayers to host 7 FIFA World Cup matches in June and July 2026 at BC Place Stadium in Vancouver. The NDP government finally revealed that the price tag has more than doubled, and it says BC will score a tourism revenue windfall during and after the World Cup. But one of the world's top sports economists says that will not happen. My guest is Victor Matheson, professor at the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. He has researched the costs and benefits of World Cups, Olympics, and Super Bowls. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Last week, NDP Tourism and Sports Minister Lana Popham finally revealed the new estimate for hosting FIFA World Cup 26 matches in Vancouver. The price tag has more than doubled to between $483 million and $581 million. A third of that will be spent on renovations to BC Place Stadium, which will host 7 matches instead of the expected 5 just over 2 years from now. Popham blamed inflation and FIFA requirements for driving up the cost. Unlike Toronto, Seattle, and Santa Clara, California, the NDP government is keeping the contracts with FIFA secret. The NDP government thinks BC can make the money back with increased tourism revenue after the World Cup, but my guest says that is highly unlikely. Returning to the podcast is Victor Matheson, one of the world's top sports economists. He is a professor at the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. Victor, the World Cup will be played in 16 cities across North America, US, Canada, Mexico, in just over 2 years. 104 matches, 48 nations, the biggest single sport event ever. And it's going to be very expensive for people around North America. We're starting to see what the costs are in Canada, especially in Toronto and Vancouver, where the costs have gone up. And we've got politicians who are trying to sell the benefits. Looking at the British Columbia figures, what are your first thoughts?
It's amazing that you're having a tournament on a continent with literally dozens of stadiums that should be ready to go overnight for a World Cup, yet still somehow managing to have costs in Vancouver of $500 million to host. That's an absurd amount of money to spend on what is essentially a soccer game that should be able to go on very easily with no sorts of costs like this. This is almost as much as it costs to host the entire 1994 World Cup across every venue in the United States. Again, the fact that you can get numbers that big that quickly really shows either no ability to push back against FIFA or no thought on anyone's side really to try to keep these costs down.
The public in British Columbia remembers the 2010 Winter Olympics and all the promises that were made on the way to the Olympics of the billions in economic development and revenue. And of course, on the way to the Olympics, the Great Recession happened. A lot of things changed and the benefits were not as sold to the people. Do you think that there could be a bit of a problem for the politicians here? The public is smarter than they think.
Well, that's definitely what we're seeing in the United States, where we've had several big stadium deals going off in the last couple years. The biggest one being a new NFL stadium in Nashville. That was approved not by voters, but by the city council. But the voters got a chance to actually look at that deal later, not in time to actually stop that deal from going through. It was $1.3 billion in U.S. dollars for a new stadium for the Tennessee Titans. But they did manage to throw most of the city council out, as well as the mayor. Again, you know, Folks aren't necessarily happy when taxpayer money is spent on someone else's entertainment, especially when you have someone as, quite honestly, as dislikable as FIFA, the ones who are calling the shots there.
The electorate is not happy with the increase in prices, increase in taxes, and with that, a lot of people have been priced out of their homes, have had to move to other cities in British Columbia, and we've also seen a major increase since the Olympics in homelessness. If we already got the world's attention in 2010, we already got the world's attention in 1986 with the World's Fair. There's a major question of why cities line up to host these events if they really don't need the extra bump in tourism. If they're also grappling with issues already of trying to fit everyone in and find everyone a house, a place to live in a big, busy city like Vancouver.
Well, so quite honestly, and I will say that I'm a huge soccer fan myself, as a fan standpoint. Been to the World Cup. I've been to the Women's World Cup multiple times, including a great trip up to Canada back in 2015, over into Ottawa and Montreal. The thing is that something like a World Cup really should be able to be put on affordably, where there are huge net benefits, both in terms of just a great amenity to bring to Vancouver, as well as potential economic benefits from tourism. But when you manage to have an event that should be quite affordable to put on, because of the existing infrastructure all around the United States and Canada and Mexico, and somehow this morphs into a $500 million event, that's where you should be concerned, because again, there should be nowhere close to $500 million in costs associated with simply staging seven soccer games. This is something that should be able to be done on basically a shoestring budget. These are not wildly expensive events unless someone talks you into making them wildly expensive. And then, these costs can go spiraling out of control. And I think that's what we've seen in Vancouver. I think that's what we've seen in Toronto. Again, trying to put a World Cup game in a stadium that's far too small for that, and therefore having to spend a bunch of money expanding the Toronto MLS team's stadium there. I suspect much lower costs across most of the American venues, that again, I mean, they host games with 75,000 people on a regular basis every Sunday of the fall. Again, there's no reason that we should be looking at $500 million for a venue to host seven games. There's no reason that a soccer match between two international teams should cost $80 or $90 million per game.
Matches here in Vancouver at BC Place Stadium, we're told that the stadium renovations could run up to almost $200 million, according to the provincial government estimate. And that includes a long list of things they want to do. They want to build broadcast facilities, improve the washrooms, have better hospitality, especially for the VIPs. So a lot of scope creep happens, it seems.
Well, I think that's definitely the case, and we do see this other places where teams or stadium owners who can't get what they want out of local governments or out of local taxpayers in a normal circumstance, basically use a mega event as the excuse to get all of those upgrades that they have been wanting but couldn't get on their own. And again, I think that's exactly what we're seeing here, is that without the World Cup, the taxpayers and local governments would say, no way, we want to do this. But they bid for the Olympics, get it, and then they say, well, it's out of our hands, we have to do this because of FIFA. And of course, that's probably planned along the whole way, right? This is the way to get those stadium improvements, those revenue improvements for the teams involved here, in ways that they couldn't do without this. And again, we see this again and again. But again, let's just imagine what's happening here. This is again $500 million in costs, which works out to, $80 or $90 million per game. $80 million per game. That's more than like the Super Bowl cost to put on, right? And these games are not are not at the level of the Super Bowl. Individual games might be, but not each individual game there. The fact that you could get costs that high for what, again, should be a completely affordable event for a city to put on, again, just shows how you can get expenses to creep up on you, and how you can kind of fall into the trap of doing the bidding of FIFA.
Yeah, with these seven matches, there will be a large international viewership. The viewership per match for a World Cup tends to be higher than a Super Bowl. Super Bowl tends to get about 115 million, 120 million in the US, but there's something to be said about scarcity. There's one Super Bowl every year in one city. There's the halftime show that makes it the spectacle that it is. World Cup matches, there's going to be 104 in 2026 out of 16 cities. New York, New Jersey, Meadowlands, where the final will be, will get a lot of attention, the eyeballs of the world. But a lot of these other matches, especially the earlier matches, will come and go in people's consciousness.
Matter of fact, this never happens. So tourism promoters always say, put a big mega event somewhere, and we're going to generate an uncountable amount of advertising for our city. This will drive tourism through the future. Literally, Toronto's numbers that they just came out with are suggesting hundreds and hundreds of thousands of additional visits over the next 7 years after the World Cup is over. They're expecting something like three times as many additional visits in the future because of the World Cup than you actually get during the World Cup itself. This is totally unhinged from reality. The tourism folks say, well, no, the way that tourism is generated is through word of mouth, and people go to a city and they experience it, and they go back home and they tell their friends about it, and their friends then go and visit the city. That is true, but that is absolutely 100% not true when it comes to sporting events. So, for example, if I go to Vancouver, and I've been there, what a great city. But you say, hey, I went to Vancouver, and man, the food there was fantastic, and there's great shopping, and the place we were in, it was just beautiful, and they had gardens, and then we actually took a vacation for a couple other days, and we went over to Victoria, and wow, this was great. And you go back and tell your friends about that, and they say, yes, I want to go visit Vancouver. But what happens with a sporting event is if you say, hey, I went to Vancouver for the World Cup, and man, it was awesome. We saw Belgium versus Senegal, and Belgium should have beat them 3-0, and they got up 3-0. But then Senegal came roaring back, and we saw this great penalty kick, and then there was a red card, and it was great. And then we went and partied with a bunch of the Senegalese fans after the game, and we danced in the streets with them. Oh boy, that was great. And you tell your friends, and they're like, oh, that sounds awesome. I want to go to the next World Cup. What you get advertising for is not for the city of Vancouver. You get advertising for the next World Cup. And it's not that the World Cup is not iconic in lots of ways. Again, I'm a huge soccer fan. If someone says, hey, do you remember Diego Maradona versus England and the hand of God in that World Cup game? I'll say, yes, I know exactly what that was. I know the circumstances of that goal. I know what happened. I can picture it in my mind. I haven't the slightest idea what city that took place in. I know what World Cup it took place in. I know where on the field it occurred. I know that it caused, I know the goalkeeper that Maradona outleapt, but I have no idea what city that was in, and I would never know. And I could probably look it up, but that's not the advertising you get. I can speak for myself personally. Again, I've been to Canada for a World Cup, the Women's World Cup. Fantastic. I would point out that they didn't put grass down for the women. Hopefully that would be different today. But I went to Ottawa. Fantastic city. Had a wonderful time there. Saw some great match. Saw a doubleheader of women's matches that are there. Had a great time. Went over to Montreal. Saw another match there. And then came home. I haven't been back to Ottawa since. I have been to another Women's World Cup. Haven't been back to Montreal since. Again, it is not generating tourism for Ottawa and Montreal. It's generating tourism for the World Cup. I went back to France for the next World Cup. I went to Australia for that World Cup for the women, but I didn't go back to Ottawa. So yeah, the World Cup does generate new tourism, but it's not going to generate it for Vancouver. The idea that it would is totally contrary to literally every anecdote as well as the data. The other problem here is that we have 104 games now instead of 64 because of the expansion in the World Cup. And that means that Vancouver gets a couple additional games. But the games that are going to be played thanks to this are going to be, they're not going to be additional games of Argentina versus Brazil, right? It's not going to be Germany, France. These are games that are going to be, these are going to be more Senegals. These are going to be more Panamas. These aren't going to be more France's. These aren't going to be more England's. Right. If you look at, so I was looking at some data from 2014. That was a World Cup in Brazil. The teams that you would get in if we had had more teams back then, we'd get Romania, Iceland, Denmark, Panama, Peru, Jordan, Uzbekistan, New Zealand, Senegal, there we go, Burkina Faso, and Ethiopia. These are not teams that are going to generate gigantic tourism numbers coming over. So I think they're wildly ambitious about how many foreigners are going to come to Vancouver for these games. The English will flock there if you have a game from England. The Germans will flock there. You won't have the Americans. The Americans will almost certainly be at home the whole time. But you won't be getting huge numbers of tourists flocking from the rest of the world because, again, there's only so many Bolivians who are going to come to see a match all the way up in Canada. And you're certainly not going to generate additional tourism in the future. And the last thing is, even when you do get the Germany England game that fills up all of your hotels, and based on the data here, they are suggesting that each one of these games is going to fill up at least 15,000 hotels in Vancouver. Well, Vancouver only has about 25,000 hotel rooms, most of which are full in the summer anyway. So there's no discussion about how these World Cup fans are going to displace other types of tourists. And so these the tourism ministers in Vancouver, they seem to do a lot of adding and multiplying. They're just not very smart about subtracting, and they place no idea in how sports fans would displace the other economic activity that normally takes place in Vancouver in the summer.
Here in the economic impact assessment that they provided to the media after the news conference, not before the news conference, their summary says that, quote, "The event is not expected to directly generate GDP or significant revenue for the province, as the majority of direct revenues will go to FIFA," end quote. So they're hanging their hat on these hopes and dreams of tourism riches and $1 billion they think will be generated afterwards, which you've already commented on. In this report, they also rely on an input-output model, which you're very familiar with as a sports economist. I wonder if you can explain what an input-output model is to the listeners, and if that's reliable at all for forecasting any economic bump from a mega event.
Sure. So what an input-output model is it tries to determine when you spend money in a city, how does that money get spent and re-spent within the city? Right. Okay. So, because it's not just about a tourist coming to town and spending money. To get a full clear picture on the effect of a tourist visit to Vancouver, what we want is we want to know how that money will get spent and respent in the economy. So, an input-output model basically says, let's look at the economy over many, 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 many years. And let's see what happens when you spend a dollar at a hotel. Well, if you spend a dollar at a hotel, some of it goes into, hotel profits, some of it goes into the wages of those room cleaners and those desk clerks and things like that. And then those desk clerks go out after work and they go down to the local bar or the local brew pub and they buy a beer. And then when they buy a beer, that local brewer spends some money and they go and buy money at the coffee shop the next morning. And this all works through the economy, and we get this whole idea of an input-output model about where money comes in, where it's all going to end up. And we add this up over all these multiple rounds of things that could happen, and we try to figure out what would happen with $1. And most of the time, $1 might actually end up being $2 worth of benefit to the city because of all those subsequent rounds of spending. The problem is that none of these input-output models make any sense when a mega event comes to town. Because when a mega event comes to town, the normal input and output sort of things are not their normal sense, right? And you get lots more in the way of leakages than you normally do. So for example, the biggest single thing that a tourist is going to spend money on in Vancouver in the World Cup is World Cup tickets. Of course, none of that is going to be respent in Vancouver because all that money goes into the pockets of FIFA, who takes it back to Switzerland and divvies it up back there. The second biggest thing that people are going to spend money on is hotel rooms. And again, normally, you know, maybe 60 or 70 cents of your hotel dollar ends up in the pockets of the people who work there during normal times. But during the World Cup, hotel prices will be two or three times their normal rates. But those hotel chains are not going to increase the wages they pay to their room cleaners or their desk clerks. All that money is going to be higher profits to corporate headquarters. It's going to go back to New York City. It's going to go to shareholders all around the world. And therefore, there's going to be far more leakages. And so, again, those input-output tables don't make any sense because that dollar being spent isn't getting respent in the local economy in any sort of the same way that it normally does. So, yeah, these things have a role. They are real things. But the sort of data we have about how these input-output models should work during mega events, we just simply know they can't and shouldn't be used during mega events. And anyone who does do that is doing a disservice. They're really engaging in economic malpractice.
Of course, Vancouver, great natural setting. We've got great restaurants, very diverse city. We also have in Vancouver, less than a kilometer from where the matches will be played at BC Place Stadium, is the downtown east side, which is perhaps the poorest neighborhood north of Mexico. And the social conditions there before the Vancouver 2010 Olympics were described by United Nations Special Rapporteur as being third world conditions, a neighborhood that they're not going to be able to rescue or clean up in the next 2 years. Do you think that the reputation of a host city for a World Cup will also mean that the money spent to get that publicity may not be the best investment? We've seen in previous World Cups, especially Qatar, for instance, in 2022, a lot of attention to the world media was spent looking at the conditions of workers, was spent looking at the government and its human rights record. Do you think that there's a bit of a gamble by the politicians here that they think the world media is going to come to Vancouver and leave and tell the world that it is the greatest place on the earth, when in fact we do have some very, very serious issues here with homelessness and social conditions?
We don't have any evidence that cities get really any sort of important media bump from hosting mega events, because what people remember is the games themselves, not where those games took place. And the fact it's not like people don't know about Vancouver. I mean, again, the economic impact reports of Vancouver are saying if we only have these World Cup games, we're going to get big boosts of tourism, of increases in the number of Canadians that are going to Vancouver, as if somehow the World Cup is going to put Vancouver on the map. And Canadians that have never heard of the city somehow are going to now flock to Vancouver because of the World Cup. And you know, the answer to that is, you know, if you're Canadian and the World Cup is what puts your city on the map, I mean, you got to get yourself a new map. This is Vancouver, right? Of course, it's already on everyone's map. It's hard to believe that you get a whole lot of tourism bump from this when, again, people are focusing, number one, on the soccer, and number two, it's not like you're putting this this event in Yellowknife or something like this, right? This is not Fort McMurray, right? This is Vancouver, you know, the third largest city in Canada. It's on everyone's map. It's a well-known tourist destination for everyone. It's simply implausible that people would say, oh, I'd never heard or thought about Vancouver until now. And that's just for Canadians. They're also are expecting, again, huge increases in tourism from other places. And again, that's just not going to happen. If a bunch of Belgians show up in Vancouver because Belgium has a game during the World Cup, that's not going to spur for future tourism from Belgians. They're going to say, yeah, it was a great city, had a great time, but they're not coming back. Regular tourists might, sports tourists don't. As for the other piece, you're absolutely right. Just because people learn about a city doesn't mean what they learn about the city is all positive. We often call this the Barbara Streisand effect, is that bringing attention to something actually, trying to not bring attention to something is actually what brings attention to it, right? This is from this idea that Barbara Streisand didn't want her house on visible on like Google Maps. And she said, please take it off. And everyone heard that Barbara Streisand wanted her house off of Google Maps. So everyone goes to Google Maps to find her house. Again, having attention doesn't necessarily mean the attention is going to be great. There's a lot of ways this can go wrong. It can be, first of all, you can see some of the unpleasant underbelly of the city, as you were talking about, Bob. You could also have there be some sort of significant problems associated with the games, right? You could have a terrorist incident. We've had those twice in the Olympics, not in the World Cup ever. You could have protests. We could have some sort of civil disruption associated with that. That would reflect negatively on Vancouver, and people would come away with poor ideas. Or you could have, and I don't think this would happen in Vancouver, or you could have, but you could have the experience of people who went to the Super Bowl in Jacksonville, Florida, where basically everyone said, yeah, Jacksonville, there's nothing there, right? So I don't think that would happen with Vancouver, what a great city it is. But you could have people, be underwhelmed by the city when they're there, and therefore, you don't get any sort of reputation boost at all.
And you bring up Barbara Streisand. She has some hit songs with titles like Promises, Left in the Dark. Now, we're left in the dark by a lot of things when FIFA comes to town. And also another song, Pure Imagination. Pure Imagination, because a lot of what the politicians will sell to us, as you found in your research, is just pure imagination. And Victor Matheson, one of the world's top sports economists from College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. Thanks again.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taipei court hears final arguments in gender change without surgery case. Court set to issue judgment on May 30th, impossible first for Taiwan. The transgender man, using the pseudonym Nemo, has been pursuing the right to legally change his gender with the Ministry of the Interior since 2022. Medical records, doctors' opinions, and personal testimonies were presented to show Nemo had identified as a male since he was a child, and that he had received psychological and medical care as a result. In the Kyoto News, China-friendly foreign minister becomes Solomon Islands PM. Solomon Islands Foreign Minister Jeremiah Manelli, known for his China-friendly stance, was sworn in as the South Pacific nation's new prime minister on Thursday, more than 2 weeks after a closely watched general election where no party secured a majority. Manelli, who was chosen as premier by newly elected members of parliament earlier in the day, is expected to continue the pro-China policy of former Prime Minister Manasseh Sogavare, whose government cut ties with Taiwan in favor of Beijing in 2019 and signed a controversial security pact with the Asian power in 2022. In the Hong Kong Free Press, extremely regretful that Hong Kong has not seen Labor Day marches since 2019, opposition group chair says. Chan Po-ying, leader of the League of Social Democrats, said Thursday that the government tended to side with employers on labor issues and was slow to respond to workers' demands. Traditionally, Labor Day, May 1st, in Hong Kong, was an occasion for activists to hold colorful protests and march for labor rights, but the last time there were such scenes was in 2019 before Beijing imposed a national security law. Since then, the city has not seen any large-scale organized protests. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, in apparent reversal, Kotex says there will be no office of first spouse. The Oregon governor appears to acknowledge giving Amy Kotek Wilson too much sway. Governor Tina Kotek told reporters that, as long as I'm governor, there will not be an office of the First Lady. What remains unclear is whether the governor's wife will continue to attend staff meetings on behavioral health and other issues, and what level of communication she will have with Kotek's policy staff or with state agencies. In Cascadia Daily News, Whatcom County to investigate handling of sexual harassment case. In the John Hutchings incident, the $225,000 settlement was reached within 72 hours of the county receiving a threatening letter from the complainant's lawyer alleging a pattern of harassment and discrimination that the county failed to properly address. The letter alleges that the county protected the former Public Works Director Hutchings despite his creation of a hostile work environment, sexually harassing multiple employees, and retaliating against the woman who received the settlement for reporting harassment to Human Resources. In Canadian press, police order BC woman who praised Hamas not to protest for 5 months, says her group. Sammy Dune says in a statement that Charlotte Cates was briefly detained by Vancouver police before being released on a condition that she not attend any protests, rallies, or assemblies until a court date on October 8th. It says Cates has been charged, but a spokeswoman for the BC Prosecution Service says it does not have a file on Cates and is waiting for a report from police to Crown Council. On April 26th, Cates called Hamas heroes, glorified their October 7th massacre that killed 1,200 Israelis, and demanded that Hamas and other groups be removed from Canada's terrorist list. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the legacy of the late Herb Capozzi, the former Canadian Football League player and social credit politician who brought the North American Soccer League to Vancouver in 1974. Capozzi's Vancouver Whitecaps debuted May 5, 1974 at Empire Stadium. Just over 5 years later, they became Soccer Bowl champions and ignited a love for the beautiful game across British Columbia. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 5th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 5th of May in 1974, 50 years ago, the Vancouver Whitecaps brought the North American Soccer League to Empire Stadium? The San Jose Earthquakes were 2-1 winners in a shootout, but Neil Ellett scored the first goal for Vancouver just before halftime. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News on X, formerly Twitter, for news as it happens. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.